Damn.
Yo, welcome to the show, ADHD show. You already know we got me, Machete, and our special guest, Yoshi. We're here to put it down. Cheech on the keys, you know he's been around. Got on the beatbox, you know what he do. ADHD crew coming at you. Please kick back and listen in. Dope show, you already know. Oh shit, donate to our Patreon. Everybody donate to our Patreon. Yeah, welcome to the show, everybody.
Rubber on me, Charlie.
How do you do that? Like, do you... no, it's really good. I don't even hear my music. But do you think about the lyric beforehand? Mm-mm. Or you just do it on the spot?
While it's happening, I'm just like...
That's amazing.
I don't know. It's not that good. It's not that good. I'm not... thank you. I should be better because I free flow twice a week for about maybe 2 minutes or maybe... Yeah.
Because you know what popped in my head? Like, if you're doing that in last minute, last second to do that, it'd be amazing if Shakespeare knew how to rap. Like, how he would have wrote his stories, you know?
Yeah. It's if I write it down, the raps would be really dope. But I'm just like, yo, whatever.
Who does that best?
Same thing every week.
It's the same thing every week.
Welcome to the show.
You already
donate
know.
Donate to the Patreon. You know.
But who's famous for that, like, making shit up in last minute?
Jay-Z.
Jay-Z did that a lot. Eminem. I don't know.
No, Jay-Z was specifically never... He was notorious for never writing down his lyrics. Mm-hmm. So he had, like, a general idea what he wanted to say, but in the booth is where he comes up with the actual flow.
Do you think he was surprised how good he was?
I don't know. I'm surprised. Because, yeah, I guess apparently, have you seen that documentary, Fade to Black? It's how they made the Black Album.
Mm-hmm. That was a fucking great documentary.
I don't know what Black Album is.
It's a Jay-Z came out.
You know,
out
a black
with,
person's album?
Yeah. So he said he was going to retire like in 99 or 2000 or something. And when he did that, he made this album called The Black Album, and he had cameras follow him.
Yeah.
I think some of it was staged. I don't know.
Well, what do you mean staged?
I don't know.
They were just following him.
No, I think some of it was just like, I don't know. I think it was, they recreated it. You know, let's get Tim back in the studio and let's recreate how we came
here,
up with.
Give him that giant bottle of strawberry milk. You remember that? Yeah.
You know, I go Greece a lot, and I don't think I'm saying the word right, but they believe this notion of people who are genius. Mm-hmm. Like, they literally believe they're possessed. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a demon, but Damien or some spirit that inspired that geniuses, you know? Hmm. And I quite often when I reach people like that, it's almost like they don't even know where it comes from. I remember years ago, they were interviewing Bob Dylan. He said early on in his career, he doesn't even know where it comes from. It's just one album after another, masterpieces, right? And now that he's older, he's like, it comes to him every once in a while, but not when he was young. Like, he didn't understand, is it like talent or... He was almost like a genius. People are like possessed by something, you know. Hmm.
I like that because I'm a huge fan of saying that
possession
of like when you're inspired.
Yeah,
like there was an artist who I used to work with in the studio who used to say we're in the presence of inspiration.
Yeah,
and I was
like,
what? So like almost like a like right now inspiration's happening and it's in the spirit of inspiration is with us, and it's almost like you have to act with urgency because you don't know when that moment could leave, you know. So there was always a time where he always asked me, because you have to be ready, because when in the moment strikes, when the talent meets inspiration, it's pretty powerful.
I think even the word genius, like if you look at the word origin, it's almost like it's something related to genie or something, kind of spirit possess you. And I remember Samuel Taylor Coolidge, I think that's the guy. He had this really long poem. Mm-hmm. So I think he was smoking heroin or something, opium or something in his train. And he woke up and he had this massive masterpiece poem in his head. He's writing everything down as fast as he can before he forget. And the fucking the guy who clicked your ticket interrupted him. And he only remembered like maybe one third or half of it, you know.
Oh.
So you don't even know where that shit comes from.
There is something to that, like, having a recorder with you.
Well, this is like an 1800s.
So. Well, yeah.
How dare he not have his iPhone ready?
Idiot, yeah. No. Yeah. But like, when we're practicing, like, if we have, whenever we have something good, I'm like, oh, let's play it again. Let me record it real fast because you forget it. And then you go back on your phone and you have like these old songs that I like, oh, this is pretty dope. Dude, I completely forgot about it.
I do the same thing. So I have a jam session every now and then with a few friends. Shout out to Keeping It Crispy and Google Guy. But we all get in the studio, and no matter what, I always put like a mic out. If it's not like an actual multi-track recording, but I always put a mic out and just hit record. Yeah. And everything just seems so lame. I was like, man, we were just trying too hard. It was weird.
Yeah.
And we go back and listen to the tape, and we're like, oh, fuck, that was really good. Like, there's a few fleeting moments of where everything's like clicking. Yeah. And you're like, there's like a good 30 seconds that we can pull from, like, or a good minute that you just got it. Like, you guys were locked in the pocket.
There is something, too, about that where you were in the moment when you're playing something and it feels like, this sucks. I suck. And then you go back and to listen to it, and you're like, it's actually pretty good. That was pretty decent. Nah, you know? Or sometimes you have the opposite where you're like, wow, that was not very good. But most of the time when I'm playing stuff, I'll go back and listen to it. I'm like, wow, that sounds a lot better now than when I was playing it. Yeah, when I'm playing it, it just sounds like I'm playing the same shit I play every day. Do you get like that with when you do you ever record yourself anymore?
Kind of, but I usually like – I don't know if this makes sense. Sometimes I have a premise for idea for something. Mm-hmm. I don't know why there's some interest. So I write it down and I don't know, maybe 6 months or maybe sometimes if I forget, year or two later when lucky, like, and then something will pop in my head. It's almost like, I guess I'm not an artist, but a real artist will see a giant marble of stone and they would chip it away and they make this masterpiece statue, right? Like, so like, I guess real artists could see something where most people say like, what is that shit? But they'll chip it away and create this art piece.
That's a part of my favorite thing is like, is collaborating with somebody and getting like a kernel, right, of something that they either came up, a riff or whatever, a bass line, a guitar line, whatever, a vocal melody, and then just trying to build on it. That's my favorite thing because it's like, I always find, no matter what the situation is, it's almost like someone would give you the rules, and then within this key or within this, like, you know, progression and vibe, get a little clever and creative. And I try to do as minimal as possible. Mm. Like, I'm down to stay on a note for a minute.
I know, that's your life motto.
That's my motto, dude. That's what I do, stay in the scene.
It's a very convoluted way of saying I know what I'm going to about to say might sound so silly and ridiculous, but there's a reason I'm telling you. It has something to do with creativity and inspiration. But like, you know, last couple of years, whenever I go to brothels, it's really, really annoying because most of the prostitutes are on their fucking phones. They're not even paying attention to customers, right?
Like, bitches.
And it's really annoying. But in Greece, when you go to brothels, there's old lady will talk to you and introduce the girl. So she's not on the phone. So they're kind of paying attention to you.
Right.
But I think phones are really killing creativity because
I don't know.
Because when I was younger, daydreaming is not a bad thing. Because, you know, sometimes even like if I remember right, Isaac Newton's like sometimes when he's working or thinking about something, but he let his kind of mind kind of float away thinking something. And sometimes idea will pop in your head.
Yeah.
But if you're constantly on the phone all the time, you don't really have that moments of like daydreaming unless something to inspire you. So like I think cell phones are really causing young people with short attention span, hookers. And not giving you a sense time to like a break and kind of let your mind wander because the phone is really dictating what you should be thinking instead of allowing this intuition or creativity. And I think there's going to be a lot less of that. And I don't think it's good.
I think there's going to be a little bit of an evolution, to put it nicely, or a way how people are going to use that as a tool to evolve their creativity. Right now, I just don't see it. But I know that's well, what humans do. They adapt, yeah. You know what I mean? So right now, I don't think people are going to be thinking about daydreaming to come up with their ideas. I think they're going to hopefully use their phone as a tool.
But that's exactly what I was going to say. That you like I'm horrible at keeping track. I'm not organized at all. So the phone really helps me stay organized. Like you recording stuff. Yeah. And then taking notes, like those two things alone, like really changed like a lot of shit.
So it's just working for you,
yeah.
And also, maybe it has to do with maybe we grew up without it, and we know how to think without it and use it, and it's not integrated into our lives so like so deeply. Because I do remember like when I was young, looking up at like the clouds and seeing like animals and shapes and just stare at the stars at night, you know what I mean, and stuff like that, mainly because we're poor and I didn't have Nintendo.
TV didn't work.
TV didn't work. No, but I mean it's there's something to be said for like having an imagination and playing outside and stuff. And now I'm not saying kids are not getting that, they're just getting a new kind of entertainment that's a little more powerful than just like wondering in the stars and staring out there. I think the first time that I've ever seen a cell phone, specifically the iPhone, it was magical, dude. Like it was a magic. I could not believe what I was like fucking with on the phone. And now you get that into the hands of a little kid, that shit is powerful too. They have no control over it.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, and I think anyone older than my generation, they used to thought that not having access to great education or library for that matter, or not having enough information. But these days, with a phone, you have access to almost too much information, you know? And then I think judgment, having a taste, and I don't know, it's my generation, so there's just two schools of thoughts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I turned 50 this year. So in 1984, that was the year the book George Orwell was 1984, you know, predicted all that stuff. That book used to warn people that state government controlling you, taking your freedom away, on and on. But I think that shit was wrong. You know what's right?
What?
Brave New World. It's not that people take information away and take your rights away. It's giving you too much information now to the point you don't even give a shit. You know, it's not like even if Mueller's report had information that proved that President Trump was guilty. The reality is nobody really gives a shit. Yeah. And it's completely opposite of what I thought when I was younger. Like it's like North Korea, all this state control place taking people's rights. It's opposite. It's more dangerous.
Yeah, because they're keeping them in the dark, not letting them know what the hell's going on.
In fact, they give you too much information, too much entertainment to the point where you just don't give a shit. And I think I know a lot of people hate Trump, but he's really not the real problem. He's just a symptom of a problem, you know? And like, if it wasn't Trump, it would be some other guy who does wrestling act and win a presidency. You
know? Yeah, but I think he's just, I think he's, the other people are a little bit more gracious and classy to hide it, as opposed to Trump is a little rougher on the edges, and he just is blatantly.
I saw a video of Stephen King talking about his The Dead Zone.
Yeah.
You remember that movie?
Yeah.
Where he basically, you know, predicted that somebody, because of the way politics, you know, doesn't do anything and then nothing happens, that he predicted that someone who just says whatever the hell he wants was going to get elected. And that's exactly what happens in that movie.
Yeah. It's insane. And there's, you know, we did a little thing with Vox called Primetime. And it's basically.
Is that a podcast?
Yeah, it's a podcast. Yeah. Okay. So the show was basically how primetime television changed the world.
Right.
And one of the things was how basically the television had, you know, swayed the public's opinion of certain presidents all the way back to Nixon and, and Kennedy and stuff, you know?
That's correct, because everyone who heard the debate between Nixon and Kennedy on the radio thought Nixon won.
Right.
But anyone who watched the televised thinks so. Kennedy won because he seemed more presidential.
So, so to back that up, that whole we did this like, you know, research on the podcast, but they went into detail by getting historians and people who who covered the, who were in the in their office and stuff, that the preparation were different because Nixon was a little bit more old school and wasn't aware how powerful television was.
Right. He learned the hard way.
Yeah. He learned the hard way. He got fucking beat on that debate.
And did they say he was like sweating and
he
stuff?
He was sweating. Yeah. Yeah. And the day before Kennedy showed up and saw the stage, he went and matched his suit to the, like, so that complement the background. Like, he went in and prepped. Nixon didn't.
I'm going to be on TV.
And Nixon didn't. Nixon went in, like, without any knowledge of what was happening, and he wore a gray suit, which blended into the background, and it really fucked with him, and it just didn't, he just didn't prepare properly. And that is basically a product of years and years of years of that happening, and you have the most charismatic president, Obama, come in, and you have all this good stuff happening, but he used the media, he used that kind of platform, but yeah, Trump is a TV president for sure. He knows how to play to the camera, he knows to give us sound bites, he knows what America wants, and he's full on just like overdrive and just giving like an abundance. Like,
I'm not can I make two comments on that one? Yeah. I think Nixon sort of learned the lesson because when he was vice president for Eisenhower, he kind of traveled with some kind of scandal with finance or money or something. And he made this amazing speech on TV with his wife. But what won him all is like, he said something about, I'm not giving it. So his dog had something to do with it. With a bribe or something, am I getting in trouble for the money issues? But my family is not giving up the dog, and people love dogs so much in television. He won the public over to him, so he benefited from TV earlier when he was vice president. Mm. And the thing with Trump is during primaries when you're competing among your own peers in the same party, basically you have to get personal. Because you're in the same party, right? So you basically believe in the same policies.
Yeah.
So how do you distinguish yourself from the rest of the party is to expose your personality and kind of personal attack.
Yeah.
It sounds ugly, but that's the best way to win it. And I think Trump living in New York City with all the entertainers, whether in SNL in the 70s or Howard Stern, and he's hanging out with all these entertainers and TV and stand-up. He learned all those tricks. Now, he can't go – I don't think he could be head-to-head with like a top-notch stand-up comedians. Mm. But when he ran against the guys in Riverside, they had no chance.
He destroyed them.
He destroyed them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like – you know, because most people are not going to read laws and policies, you know. It's whoever gives the zingers.
That's who I see like real scary, like what some of these people they have running against them. Like Elizabeth Warren, she is not – she could not handle a fucking running, debating him because he's a fucking, you know, bully and he's gonna fucking make fun of her and she's not gonna know what to say. I feel like, I don't know.
So good.
I feel like Bernie could do it. And Bernie's got Cardi B now. And it's all turning in his favor.
So out of all the Democratic people, who do you think have the best chance of beating
him? I think Bernie, number one.
I love Bernie.
I think if he gets, up against him, he would win.
Didn't they debate already or something or no?
No. They did the first Democratic debates with two nights, 10 people on each stage because there were so many people.
Right.
To go into the personal attacks. Kamala Harris was like fucking attacking the shit out of Joe Biden. Joe Biden, I think, sucks. Yeah. I don't think he has a fucking...
This sounds really, really mean, but like I think a lot of people say he should have ran 2016. I should have thought too. But his explanation was his son passed away, which is true, very sad.
Yeah.
But...
Get over
I think
it.
I still no, my no, no. Seriously, I feel the same way because that's one of the few jobs you're president of the United States. So you mean to tell me if you're president, if your son passed away, you can't come to work? You don't have a choice. It's one of the few jobs no one should give a shit about your personal issues because
it's too important.
You should be more. You have to prioritize country first before your family. So the fact that your son passed away. Any other jobs, I understand. But this is one job where, like, that's not an excuse. And I think that he had the best chance to run against Trump in 2016.
You don't think Bernie would have done it in 2016 if he would have freaking gotten it?
He didn't have a black support, you know. I think that's a
really – Yeah, I think he did.
No.
He had that rapper Killer Mike is all about him.
Wait. Take it easy. I know you're all about pro – you're pro-Bernie, dude. Just like
my
– So is Yoshi. He loves Bernie.
I thought he would have had a better chance than Hillary, but I think I think he still was having problem with black supporters.
You like Biden, though? You think Biden has black supporters?
I think... I like Elizabeth Warren and think she's incredibly strong.
She's
a
smart
very smart. Person, but I don't... I don't know if she'll... Image is everything, you know? I think... If I was a betting man, maybe it is Kamala Harris.
Oh, really?
Because she is woman and a black, half black.
Yeah.
She will have a
black... She's a black.
Black person. She's going to have a black support and women, I think.
Yeah.
You know what? Honestly, at this point, I'm like anyone but Trump.
Dude, I'm down. Yeah, literally.
I think Trump's going to win.
You think so?
I'm afraid so.
I think Democrats are so
honestly.
Incompetent. You have to be more ruthless than him. And I think they don't want to get dirty.
Honestly, I still really do believe that Bernie could win against him. But if it's other than him, I don't see the chances of him winning likely.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, I'm not a big fan of Jimmy Fallon in general, right?
Yeah.
And especially who that is? Shit. There's people who like that motherfucker. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. You know, like, I never met him. I'm sure he's a nice guy. His show is just a little... It's just a little...
Gay. He's a nice guy.
You know...
Are you mad at him because he was nice to Trump?
Yeah, I'm mad at him because of that.
That was ridiculous.
I feel bad for him because he was nice to everybody. I mean, he didn't believe he's going to win. That's why, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
He didn't know.
He didn't have any bad intention.
He kind of humanized Trump a little bit by letting him ruffle his hair. That was just like, what are you doing, dude? Like,
Yeah, but did you think at the time he's going to win? I didn't.
I don't know. What I mean? Like, I of course I didn't. Okay, I didn't think he's going to win. That's very true.
Mm-hmm. Neither did Hillary.
But, you know, it kind of was a big part of his, I feel, strategic plan. He knew that he needed to have a moment like that on prime time, on, like, sure. late night television. Like, was Arsenio Hall and what
Bill
was
Clinton.
It? Bill Clinton. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's just having...
And can we all agree Trump was pretty fucking funny in primaries? I have to admit, he was pretty funny.
He was.
He destroyed people's career by saying, low energy.
I know. He would just nickname people fucking...
It works.
It did. I remember watching that. Literally, this is how much I really didn't think that he was going to win in the beginning. Yeah. I was watching those debates, and I was like, this is a fucking joke. Because they had, like, a lineup of clowns. They had fucking Christie, a bunch of stupid motherfuckers.
Right,
That black dude, what was his name? The doctor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they had a bunch of ridiculous candidates, and then Trump. I was like, oh, my God, the Republican Party's falling apart, man. Right. Look at this. They're a mess.
He's really good at counterpunching.
And then he just took them all off, and he slowly just kept on getting and getting. And then, oh, my God. I remember when he got elected, I was watching some movie. I don't remember what. But I remember we were checking the results. I was checking the results while watching the movie. And I remember being, like, fucking sick to my stomach when he won. I was like, oh, my fucking God. This guy is our president.
To go to a movie was okay.
I don't know. I didn't.
Our country was in fucking peril.
There's nothing I could do about it at that point. I casted my vote.
And to watch a movie. Which one was
but
it?
Well, I don't even remember. But...
Did you know I worked on Michael Dukakis' campaign in 88?
Whoa.
You did? Wow. Yeah.
I was an idealistic kid. And there I was on election day.
I thought he was going to win.
I was watching like state after state turn red. Even he didn't even win his own state. It's like I'm saying, why did I work free for all those months?
Yeah,
I met him too. He came to South Central LA in 88 with his daughter and like, you know, running for campaign. This is like 4 or 5 months before election night. And I was a kid, you know, I just graduated from high school. And you know what was so crazy? And I never really got involved with politics after that. When he was speaking, there was a guy who was pro-life guy was in the audience. The sound that this motherfucker made, I thought he had a gun.
Really?
Oh, yeah. This sound that he made, those angry white guys, it is still terrifying, man. Because this guy, you're a fucking baby.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he's in South Central LA. And then after, you know, because we set up the whole shit, Dukakis, he shook hands with everyone. Then after we were done, we were driving out of there. We're leaving South Central LA. And that's when I saw, like, there was 4 or 5 black guys on the floor, bad drug deals or something. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, a huge eye-opening experience for me. But I still thought he had a chance winning. But I'm standing there that election night red after red after red. Like, I was so wrong.
You're like, come on, motherfucker. Get and I was
wrong.
State.
I'm always wrong about this stuff. But
he lost to Bush, or what did he do?
Yeah, he lost to Bush.
Holy shit. So what do you think? You're up with the youngsters.
What's up?
Is Cardi B going to make a difference for Bernie?
Bernie's just too far.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I want Bernie to win. I think Bernie's great. He needs to win.
You don't think the Cardi B will fucking make a difference?
I don't know, dude. I don't think so.
No?
May I also remind you, he is Jewish, and I think there's still people don't trust him.
You know,
Kennedy ran, they
love Bernie, dude. He's just, his ideas are a little too
radical.
They're pretty radical.
But you know what, though? He was saying these ideas in fucking 2016, right?
Yeah.
Now every motherfucker running right now was way farther left than anyone running in 2016. They all sound like him now. I mean, he's still he's a little bit farther than them, but he pushed the whole Democratic Party fucking light years ahead of where they were. They're all fucking copping his stuff.
He misses window.
It's like when you're dating a girl and you say all the things you don't really mean because you want to fuck her. And that's how these guys promise things, but when they're elected, it's a different story, you know.
I'm not saying that Bernie wouldn't deliver. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that he's,
you know, what happened to Jesus?
You know, they
I'm kidding.
I was like, wow, now we're crucifying a Jew. So essentially what I think is that, like, Trump is pulling everybody and drawing the line right down the middle, where it's not like he pushes people far left or, you know, right or whatever. It's just like there's two parties of just like of extremism. And I think the person who's going to like play the center is going to win.
Because it's just
because I know you're like massive change.
I think
we need massive change. I go, I know. But you need
it's going to be a repeat of last time. If they go with Biden, Biden is basically representative of Hillary. He's basically the same
Obama.
Shit. No, he's
yes.
Well, yeah, people,
he's piggybacking off of Obama.
Oh, he's totally piggybacking. Yeah. But as far as where he stands, he's fucking like Hillary number two, and it's gonna be the same shit. Boring ass white person gets beat by Trump. I think.
Oh, gets beat by Trump.
Yeah, he would totally get killed by Trump. And the Democratic Party's fucking pushing the fuck out of him.
Yeah,
he sucks. He would lose. He will lose.
Yeah,
if I had my ways. I wouldn't mind having like Elizabeth Warren running and have the the gay candidate for Indiana as his vice president. That would be so different. It'll be interesting.
That would be interesting.
Very interesting.
Pete because Buttigieg.
Because what's his name for Trump's vice president? Why am I forgetting his name?
Pence.
Yeah.
Him debating a gay guy, that would be fucking terrific.
That'd be pretty awesome.
You gotta send something completely different.
I like that guy, and I think he would probably have a better shot. Kamala Harris would have a better shot. I feel like anyone other than Biden.
Kamala
would have
Harris
a better
and
shot.
The gay guy, whatever.
That would be amazing. A woman president and then a gay
and
vice
the color
president.
Fucking fuck
female woman. President Dude, and a gay guy. Yeah,
that would just shit.
That would be the fucking rubber band snapping back hard.
That would be amazing because, like, I know that's what people want. People want someone to represent them for sure, and I feel that. However, I think those elections are going to get exposed as being too corrupt as they are.
Yeah,
and it's just not going to happen.
It's going to be fucking Biden.
The Russians are going to collude.
Dude, anyone but Biden, I feel like, will do better.
How about Trump change the vice president with John Cena?
I think so.
That would be guaranteed win.
That'd be hilarious.
That would be guaranteed win.
I mean, that would be insane.
I think it's going to be good.
They ever done that, though? Anyone switch their vice president halfway through?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Of course. Yeah.
Ooh, oh, okay.
Let's
I didn't
do
know
it.
That.
Either death or
Sparrow
Agnew resigned.
Or controversy, yeah.
So they picked Ford. So there you go. And then it has happened. Sometimes you pick vice president because you want to win certain states. Like JFK picked Lyndon Johnson, even though they both hated each other.
Yeah.
Lyndon gave him Texas.
But he needed to win that.
So
I was going to ask Yoshi about what's the guy's name? Jeffrey Epstein?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What do you know about that? What's your take on that whole story? Can you tell us what happened first? I'm sure you will stay up on this.
Why? Because he was molesting a bunch of young girls?
Yeah.
You know what I want to know is
it's Google notifications every time.
What I want to know is like where did he make money? Because did you know he was a high school teacher for a long time?
I don't know that much about it. What did you know about it?
He was high school teacher in a very exclusive private school in New York. And you know what was so creepy? He didn't even have a college degree. He was really good at math. And if you see his picture from 70s, he had like open shirt. He'll show his chest with hair.
Oh.
And he was borderline inappropriate with some of the high school
girls. I bet he was.
Girls. I mean, there's no indication that he molested any of them. But so how – and he got fired or let go eventually. And how he went from there to finance to make all this money supposedly.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of dispute whether he really had $1 billion or not. But
so was he – he was a finance guy, but was he all – but he was also supposedly – feeding young girls to all of these powerful people?
I've heard that. I don't know if that's true. I do know that when
he's in jail right now for it, right?
He's in Florida. He used to have a fancy place in Florida, and every time these girls, either molesting or sexually inappropriate things, or probably even sex, he'll pay them and he'll ask them to bring their friends over,
Mm-hmm.
And then when he got arrested recently, they went to their house. They went to his house in New York, and they found a bunch of new pictures of those girls. So that's another evidence,
Mm-hmm.
But boy, I don't know how to say this because I got to be careful. He's not technically a pedophile. He was having sex with underage girls, but
– Oh, he was?
Well, I mean, pedophile means they're like pubescent young girls,
Uh-huh.
Like, there's a documentary on Netflix kind of explaining
the difference between I heard it was pedophile and hepophile, I think.
Something like that.
Hepophile is somebody who's into teenage girls who look like they're mature.
Right? Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, but pedophile is someone that doesn't look like they're an adult.
What about X-File?
X-File, that's I don't know.
They're illegal aliens.
Yeah.
Area 51, baby.
But
– well, you don't think he did it?
Oh, he did it.
Oh, he did it.
I believe he did it. But he's going to get the best legal representation.
Yeah.
And another person got accused with him, Alan Dershowitz.
Mm-hmm.
Huge, important lawyer.
Yeah.
And people are accusing him. These young girls are accusing him of having sex with underage girls and things like that. And a couple of days ago, he wrote this opinion editorial piece saying we need to get rid of underage. He said you need to lower the age of consent.
It's a bad look.
Smart. No, then you could be like, hey,
I didn't read it. If I read it, he'd probably make a compelling argument, but it's one of those things.
I mean,
like,
I'm for it, but
I'm listening.
Because I guess it depends on who you talk to, because different countries have a different idea of what age is consent.
Yeah, right. Different states have a different idea.
Different state. So, but it just seemed like a bad timing to making that kind of argument. He said, this is not a moral thing. Well, what did he say? I kind of read a little bit of it, but he's saying it should be lowered to 16.
That's dope. it's funny though. You know Dave Smith, right, from Legion of Skanks?
Yeah, smart guy.
He is smart because he. You know what he said about
a lot of political stuff.
A few weeks ago, he was saying Jeffrey Epstein. He's going to be in jail, and he's going to
make deals with.
No, it's going to look like he had a. He's going to look like he had committed suicide, and he's going to die. And just a few days ago, he fucking was found in his jail cell with a fucking bruises around his neck and attempted suicide.
Yeah.
So Dave Smith fucking called it. He's saying somebody's going to kill this guy because he's servicing all of these super powerful people. He predicted that this fool was going to commit suicide, in quotes.
It's very interesting because in sex business, one thing the most powerful people are afraid of, this thing called Black Book.
Yeah. What's that?
Black Book, it's like one of those generic terms that they use, but this is going way back. Anyone who's been in prostitution business or madam, they have a book of all the client's name and their information.
Oh,
how much they spend.
Yeah.
This is like one of those things where, what's her name 20 years ago, got in trouble.
Heidi Fleiss.
Yeah. So rich and powerful, always afraid of who individual who procure these women mm-hmm. for them, they have a list of clients and stuff. They're always afraid of that. If there's a record.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And this is going back like 1600, 1500, wherever you
know. They always do.
Yeah, they always have that. And
that's what he also said that, or they were talking about it too. And they were saying like, you know, probably a lot of this shit was more like blackmail shit where you're like, oh yeah, let's come over. We're going to throw a party at my house.
Sure.
They hook them up with these girls and then they tell them the next day, like, oh yeah, that girl you had sex with last night, she's 17. And now they're blackmailing them because now you fucking had sex with an underage girl.
Do you know what Bunga Bunga is?
That sounds racist, but what is
Bunga Bunga, I don't know if there's a translation, but it's a term in Italy. And the former prime minister of Italy, Silvagnoni, I can't even say his name, but he's one of the richest men in Italy. He's just like Rupert Murdoch, except he has all the television stations. Mm-hmm. He owns soccer teams. But he used to be former prime minister of Italy,
mm-hmm.
and plastic surgery this, always look, trying to look young. But he used to have these parties called Bunga Bunga where just filled with beautiful women in skimpy outfit running around.
Mm-hmm.
He'll bring all his rich and famous friends over there. And he finally got in trouble, and I think they acquitted him, but he got in trouble because he had sex with a 16-year-old Algerian Lebanese girl or something.
Uh-huh.
And the underage thing, never mind that all that financial crimes and all kinds of things that they do, because he got away. And I think it's the playbook that Trump used, because it's very distasteful. It's not right. And all his cabinet are filled with these young, beautiful women who has no business skills or experience. But, you know, there would be like former weather girl or former bikini girl on TV show now during different cabinet posts in his administration.
All of the people from his pageants are on the
and he used to be, you know, ran the pageant and things mm-hmm. like that. But I think most Italian knows, like, the reason they tolerate, because most men want to be like him in the field with women and things like that. So I think, and Vladimir Putin, ruler of Russia,
oh, you know, he's fucking all kinds of kids,
but he seemed like a stern and like rural blonde, this and that, and kill people and things like that. But they're buddy buddies. Like, he liked hanging out with that guy, you know?
Of course.
So Trump.
Is it in our DNA that we want, as men, younger women?
Well,
for obvious reasons.
This goes back to your podcast. The podcast, like, is 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were doing American Beauty, they were talking about American Beauty. And he's
1999, Eyes Wide Shut. Also, remember that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you should listen to this podcast. You'd love it. But you might not, actually. Because they were talking about, you know, in that movie, Kevin Spacey's going after this high school student.
Yeah.
Who I think she might be 18. And it's not clear to me. She might be 17 or 18. Sure. Right. Very close.
She's in high school.
And
your daughter's friend. I mean, there's so many lines of not being.
Yeah. And they were saying, and they read a review from Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
And this was from the time, so 20 years ago. And the review said, you know, this movie brings up some thing that is a universe, is like a truth that guys will see a girl, and just because she's underage doesn't make you not attracted to her.
That's 100%. And people,
right? But these fools on this show were like, they're like, that's so not okay. That's not okay. That's not right.
They don't understand biology.
They're lying. They're lying. Those fools are lying. Come on.
Here's the thing. I know,
because if you don't know how old she is, and you're just seeing a person in public or something, and you can't tell, like, oh, she's 17 and a half versus 18. What's the difference between those ages? No, but you can't tell.
But the fact that we as men would want to date somebody that young is in our biology. That's what Yoshi was trying to say before you interrupted him.
I'm sorry. I was just mad because they were they were trying to deny that shit.
Ernie is still being too diplomatic, because the instinct is you do want to fuck them.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. have you ever seen, you're familiar with this, sometimes you see black or Latin girls, they're young, but they
develop
really fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. Sometimes I've seen, like, wow, she's really attractive. Yes, of course, you think about all this, I guess, terrible things.
Yeah.
Then you find out how young they are. You may feel bad, you may not. But the thing is, it's normal here, and I think a lot of these millennials are a bunch of pussy whipped that they act like proper.
Yeah.
It's okay to have these dark fantasies.
Yeah.
Like, you're not a bad person for having these. Like, Cheech, let's say you walk in a mall in Beverly Hills.
Okay, I'm with you.
You see a 14 or 15 year old girl, and she's beautiful and built, right?
Yeah.
And the only thing you think about is you want to mouth fuck her, right? Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. It's okay to think like that.
Thank
Just
you,
don't
Yoshi.
Do it.
Oh, okay. Okay, thanks.
Right? Like, some people knowing me, I want to kill them. Here's the thing. It's okay to think like that. Don't fucking do it.
Yeah.
People are too sensitive trying to the more you're trying to repress those feelings, I think you're putting yourself in even more dangerous situation because
now you're dealing with all this fucking repression. Guilt, just like
just
shame.
You know, it's just like don't fucking do those things, you know? And I think people are troubled by these dark fantasy, but folks, just like watching a violent movie, it's just a movie. Dark fantasy is just dark fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you don't act upon it, you're fine. It's normal to feel that way.
Yeah.
I think people are just too fucking sensitive. And sensitivities are hurting the world and art. Because remember, Louis C.K. was back doing the act. He did the Parkland joke.
Yeah.
I was more offended that people recorded without his permission and and attacking him because who – does anybody like getting their conversation recorded without a permission? I don't think so.
Yeah.
And if you're still working on that, right? Like you can't just say because it's too offensive to you that he's not allowed to work on it because he might keep working to the point maybe it'll have some creative relevance artwork, right?
Yeah.
Like – Come Far Away, it's a wonderful musical, right? But you know what's it about? It's about 9/11. So anybody who, without hearing it, hear somebody's doing musical about 9/11, they're just going to get upset without not even knowing anything. It's a beautiful work, but like, if you let these people mob you from prevent you from working on something and get it finished, world's going to be a terrible place just because... they're overreacting. People are trigger happy, overreacting. You know.
Yeah, that's, I think so.
That's totally true about the fucking limiting art or whatever. Because have you heard of Dina Hashem, a comedian?
Oh yeah,
from New York. She just got in trouble for doing a joke about XXX Tentacion or whatever his name is, and she
the mob's an idiot because she wasn't making fun of his
she
death.
Barely made a fucking joke about it. It was fucking pretty innocent. She was just like, oh yeah, XXX Tentacion died, and the audience laughed.
No he died and because he was carrying $50,000 in cash, he got robbed and the person took the money. She's not only idiots would make conclusion that she was making fun of his death. She was making joke about the importance of not carrying cash so you don't put yourself in the danger.
Yeah, all she said that, oh yeah, he died having $50,000. It was stolen.
Yeah.
And then she said, that's really sad, but it also is a really good commercial for Venmo.
Yes.
That was her joke. It seems like such a fucking harmless joke. It was a good joke.
And if there's a group of
people.
And
then some fucking comedian, James Davis.
A traitor.
Who fucking called her out saying that that was too offensive. Or
traitor.
If he's a comic, he's a fucking traitor.
He is a comic, yeah.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If there's a group of people who understand conversation but uncomfortable and rude and thing, these hip-hop artists, what do they talk about? Beating women, violence, drugs, stuff like that. And I'm not telling not to do it. It is art. So
I'm not telling not to beat women.
You could,
who am I?
Once again, you could talk about it, just don't do it.
Yeah
You know, like there's movie Godzilla movies, and a lot of Japanese people are killed in those buildings.
Yeah.
I'm not getting upset. It's just a fucking movie, you know?
Yeah.
But for hip hop artists who talk about a lot of truth, and Richard Pryor who talks about a lot of truth, might be offensive with other people. It's okay for you to be offended. Here's the thing. Nobody give a fuck about you being offended. You know? You shouldn't have any sort of variance on the artists because they should do whatever they think it's great, you know? Because.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I don't tell doctor what to do, right?
Yeah.
So you shut the fuck and let the comedians say the jokes, and you let the hip hop artists say whatever the inner city stuff that they're talking about and be uncomfortable, you know? But these fucking sensitive bitch ass motherfuckers,
For real.
The world is if these guys were living in the time of World War II, we'll be dead. Because they couldn't handle anything.
And that's like, it's not just that they're so sensitive. It's also like a...
Pretend they gave a shit about things.
It's not just that, but it's like a culture of complaining.
Yeah.
And complaining to somebody.
Victimhood.
Because as we know...
I'm guilty of that too, when I was younger. By the way.
As we know, Christina, my fiance, she works at a school.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that... These kids are complain about everything. Like, oh, I feel like we have no time. We have no time. We work too much. This is too hard. Which is like, okay, I understand that because I was a college student who was lazy.
Is the parents talking about their kids?
No, it's the students complaining. Oh. It's like the student staff, they're all complaining about like, this is so much work. This is so much work.
You need to give them feedback.
Yes, but it's like when I was in school, if I thought it was too much work, I just didn't do it. I didn't complain to anybody. So it's also this thing of like it's okay to complain constantly.
Well, it's you have a generation of kids who are being heard through social media, right?
Yeah,
and they have a voice and they think their voice matters, which
it doesn't.
It doesn't, right? Because it matters only when we want it to. We're saying, hey, go out and vote, kids.
Yeah.
Your vote matters. You're right. And there's too much fucking work at school. What I want. You know what I mean? There's like, now we need an extra soda machine near to the PE room. You know,
yeah.
It's not going to.
I mean, they do listen to it, but it's just like, I could have never imagined complaining about.
It's
too much work. I just wouldn't do it. I would just fucking slack.
Going back to our original point, but one of our points is like, it's just too much information. We're getting everything at the same time.
Yeah.
Too much information about fucking sex. Too much information about, because, you know, obviously porn, and you have fucking Snapchats going out of control, which I want to touch on a little later. Then you have, you know, so you have kids looking at all this shit that's on social media, butts and fucking asses, so they have access to that. Mm-hmm. They have other information about people complaining about whatever social media warriors, social justice warriors. So they have all this stuff. They're seeing all this change, and I think that they're like, I can change the world. And I'm like, no, you can't. That's our generation. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, we can. And you're like, shut up. it's such a weird thing to see that. Like, because we basically taught them that. Our whole generation said, you make a difference, every single person. And
that's true.
When they're finally speaking up, we're like, shut up, stupid millennials.
Yeah, you're right.
Just eat your porridge.
Yeah, that's true.
Can I make two comments?
Sure, of course.
Anytime someone said they're going to change the world, you should run away from those people. Because... Yeah. One of the most dangerous things that white people has ever said to colored people, we are here to help you. Run for your fucking lives. Mm-hmm. Because they came and look at what they did to Native Americans. Mm-hmm. It's a very arrogant thing to say.
Yeah.
They think they could change the world for the better. Mm-hmm. Quite often, they do usually the opposite. Mm-hmm. And two, when I was a kid in Japan, man, straight up, my teachers, they call me stupid all the time. And I remember one teacher hit me, you know, and my parents are so happy they hit me because back in those days in my hometown, like, you're supposed to punch kids if they're acting badly, you know, like, and that the teacher has so much more authority over there. Like, if my kid is acting, my mother used to tell me, just punch him in the face or whatever. That's how it is over there. And you can't sue people like that over there.
Yeah.
And they will fucking hit you.
That's some other shit.
And then the teacher was saying, like, you know why your son got a bad rap? Because he's a fucking idiot.
I want to make a comment about a scene that happened in a show we all love, Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
I love that show. I just rewatched the whole thing again.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, shit, me too.
For the first time. So there's a scene where all the kids are at like a little dinner party with the adults and stuff, and all the kids are running around, and one of the kids wouldn't stop zooming across the kitchen, and then another neighbor's dad sees the kid and smacks him.
Oh, that's right,
He's like, and then the kid, the father comes up and says, "Hey, what happened? Is everything all right?" He goes, "You know, he was not listening." And he goes, "I want you to apologize to Miss whatever." Because that's good. Not a few cents. Like, it was totally.
Yeah.
Would not. Like, if someone else today hit someone else's kid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The fucking shit storm that would go down.
Yeah.
But that shit was like, yeah, thank you for keeping him in line. Now, you apologize to Mr. So and so for not keeping, you know, for not paying, like, listening to him or whatever. And I thought that was like, wow, what a sign of the times.
Have you heard of Eric Thomas?
No, who's that?
He's a motivational speaker. He's a black dude.
Yeah.
And I love him, and he always talks to kids.
Yeah.
And I love, like, I feel like he's giving the message for these kids that they need. He's always just yelling at the kids, "You are too soft. Work harder. If the teacher don't like you, don't wonder why he don't like you. What did you do? Why doesn't she like you?" You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's basically just yelling at him, "Stop fucking being
such." When you have a fucking phone, dude, I think that's what it all stems from, dude. When you have a fucking phone in your hand, you're like, "I'm fucking powerful. This shit, I can, oh, I don't like what's happening around me. Just look down and you're entertained. Oh, I have a problem. Let me tweet about it. Oh, shit's going good in my life. Let me Instagram it. Oh, shit, I need to fucking say political stuff, whatever. Let me Facebook it."
Yeah.
So it's like they have all this power and they go, "Oh, shit, I want to like look at butts. I'm going to go to Snapchat." You know what I mean? They have everything, you know? So therefore, when something's not right out in reality, that they're able to be like, "Wait a second, I can't just tweet this from the," you know, they just feel so privileged. It's just, and we done that. We done that to them because we created ill shit. Like, we have dopest,
Honestly, dopest I've been fucking going pretty hard on Facebook right now.
Yeah.
I found a couple good pages, like.
For what?
So there's like one called Nostalgia, and they just play like random videos just from the past. Like I saw one, they're just showing the David Letterman's response to Jay Leno taking his show back.
Oh yeah,
it was pretty fucking hilarious.
Oh wait, what? Recently or old?
No, this is old. It's nostalgia. Yeah, yeah. So they just play old shit. So they play.
Well, what was Letterman saying?
He was basically saying, like, he was making fun of the fact because Jay Leno, when he came back on the show, Jay Leno was saying, like, "I want to make it clear that Conan O'Brien is not to blame for this. So please, please, no one blame Conan." And David Letterman's like, "Huh, nobody was blaming Conan." And it's just, I remember when all that shit was going down.
But can I tell you something?
Deep into the late night scene back then.
I know Letterman was bitter about that thing, but I have to say, he was like Hillary Clinton, that if he really wanted, he should have fought really hard for it. He didn't do that. Leno did.
Are you talking about when he lost the show?
Yeah. I mean, and I think clearly among comedians, a lot of people say Letterman's funny or whatever. But the thing is, at the end of the day, it's whoever want the most and work the hardest. And Leno did that.
Yeah.
And that's something that he might not want to admit. I like Letterman and Leno. You know?
I like both of them, too.
No, I mean, I thought I liked Leno when I was younger.
Yeah.
But I was listening to some of his stuff. I was like,
it was kind of whack. I did watch it.
My God, this dude was whack. Why did I like him? Oh, because he fucking invited Hugh Grant a few days after he got that prostitute. It was timing for Leno. A lot of timing.
Yeah, and you probably watched him a lot, so you like him. You know,
NBC had a lot to do with it.
Also, he understands the numbers game. He knows if he's going to win, he have to win the Midwest and the South. And he did the kind of humor really popular among them.
Letterman did
something that I guess so-called sophisticated humor.
Yeah.
It was weird humor. Fucking just weird jokes.
Nah, he had a little... Yeah,
he was great, though.
The top 10 list and everything. Yeah. You know, it was good. It's good.
I forget what he said. He said, "The movie's riveting, and we all know how interesting riveting is."
So I think, I think Letterman, with his new show on Netflix, I think he found like a new platform. I'm like actually stoked. It's a really good show. And I think that's the way he should be interviewing now. He's a pro. Like, the questions he's asking are amazing.
I just wish he was able to do more comedy in it.
Mean,
you know, he puts in his own little jokes in it, but it's like...
Yeah.
He's funny. I would like to see him do comedy. Speaking of comedy, I was watching comedians in cars getting coffee.
Eddie Murphy?
Yeah, Eddie Murphy. And then when he was talking about Bill Cosby and saying how much of a dick he was to him.
So what's Richard Pryor, I guess?
I guess so, right? Yeah. Neither one of them liked him. I guess they're too threatened by him.
Here's the thing. They were right to think him as a threat because he's a hell of a talent.
Yeah.
You know? And
I'm actually curious to see if, you know, he signed this Netflix deal.
Did he?
Yeah. Did he? $60-70 million deal?
To a special or what?
Yeah.
And Eddie's great because if you saw any of his movies early on, like he put Chris Rock in one of the Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
You know, he was like one of those server at the restaurant. Oh, yeah. He also put Chappelle in
Doolittle.
Yeah.
Something
Professor.
Nutty Professor.
Nutty Professor, yeah.
So he didn't do what Pryor and Cosby did. He was embracing young guys.
I imagine it was a little competitive back when Pryor was was around, how many black people who were in college? I mean, I don't know.
How much space was there for black people at all?
Yeah, just like, yeah, it was my space. I got it covered, you know? And
yeah, but Richard Pryor just kind of avoided him is what it sounded like. He said that when he would go to the spot that Richard Pryor wouldn't go. He's like, oh, well, Eddie's already there. I am not going.
Eddie was unstoppable in the 80s. Man. Yeah. He is unstoppable.
And it's so weird that he just stopped doing comedy.
It's amazing that he just stopped.
Well, he explained, like, it got just so weird that this is the same problem that Steve Martin.
Steve Martin said the same thing, right?
Yeah. It's because they're so famous and loved that it doesn't matter what they say, they get laughed anyway, which defeat the purpose because if you're working at jokes, it takes a while for to get it perfected. You got to the point where
he would just
he could be reading menu and they'll laugh, you know. So yeah. I think that. He got their problem was they're just too good and
same
too
thing
famous.
With Steve Martin. Yeah, he said that people would just laugh before he just saying hello. They would just start cracking up. And then they also had Seth Rogen. And
I didn't see that one.
They were saying that he's saying some of Ward's show. They found out that he was sitting next to Hannibal and Bill Cosby was there. And then Seth Rogen was like, "Oh my God, that's Bill Cosby up there!" And Hannibal's like, "Don't talk to him, fool." And he told him about the whole shit, how he's sleeping with all these women and stuff. That's some of
Wait, this is before he did that joke about him raping
women? Yeah, and he told him about it, and then he did that joke a little bit after that.
Yeah. I wonder if Hannibal regret doing that.
Why?
They gave him a career.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, if you think about legacy, he might be remembered that more than anything. Uh-huh. It's kind of heavy price to pay.
Really, you think so? Because I remember that he did do that, but when I think of him, I don't think he was happy about it. Yeah,
because people always bring that shit up.
Oh yeah,
and you might be remembered that for the rest of your life, you know, instead of something else. And I don't know the guy. I met him once, but I don't
think,
know him.
Yeah, I hung out with him a few times via
cool dude
Al Jackson. Very, very nice guy. He's you know, down to have a good time and party down. But I think he's doing some movie or something. Like, he's getting ripped. He's like getting.
Oh really?
Word around the campfire.
That's what I saw Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah,
I saw him like a few months ago, and he was on Hot Ones.
Yeah,
and I was like, the fool's working out.
Yeah,
and then
what did you see him
on Hot Ones? That's like a YouTube show where they eat chicken wings and ask him questions.
Oh, really?
And shit. Yeah. It's a good show.
It's a great show. You should see the one with Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, it's amazing. But yeah, so I was like, this fool's working out. And then at San Diego Comic-Con, they announced that he was going to be in a Marvel movie.
You see?
So it's like made sense. Yeah, he's going to be in the Eternals. So that makes sense why he's getting ripped. He's pulling a Chris Pratt on everybody.
A few nights ago, speaking of comedians. Comic-Con? No, comedians in general. Or maybe Indian comedians. I saw Aziz's special.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get through it. I needed to power through it because I heard it was good.
Yeah.
But, what was the problem with you?
The first thing is the camera angles. Didn't like him at all.
So, I didn't like his fucking Metallica shirt. That's the bullshit.
Yeah, the intro was dope of him just going outside straight onto the stage. I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then all of a sudden they had this like floating camera.
Yeah.
And then he straight up just, which is a good thing admitting to.
I heard them talking about that. Dave Smith talked about that too. He said like that was so weird. He had no joke about it. He just came
out and said sorry.
But no, there was no joke. And he was saying, come, like, you're a comedian. Make a fucking joke about
it.
Yeah, you know,
totally.
In some way.
So then that was that. And I was like, okay, cool.
But do you think if he made a joke about it, do you think the public might think it as like he's taking this not seriously?
But that's the other.
It's an unwinnable situation.
But that's the other thing that they were saying. Like, you know, you didn't even do anything that fucked up. You had a bad date. And that fucking went.
I do agree, but I mean, it's not our.
Chish, why don't you say to all the victims of the world?
I was about to say, like, other people might not see it that
Listen,
way.
Shit happens. Sometimes you get fingers in your mouth. But, like, they're just saying, well, they're, you know, and then they're obviously saying that he wasn't funny either. So I don't know. Was he funny?
Well, from what I saw, it was pretty good, but
Spike Jonze filmed this thing.
Spike Jonze directed it, yeah, supposedly. I mean, not supposedly, he did. But that's what I thought.
He's
like,
not taking credit for it.
No, but that's what I thought was weird is that Spike Jonze did this crazy, like he had a Steadicam on stage. So then you had this weird shot of Aziz, and it was like he was sitting down, and you really got to see like his posture, and he was like, dude, just get the left, right, wide.
Yeah.
Like, or, you know, medium shot. None of this artsy stuff.
They had to make it a Spike Jones joint.
I can't even say it. Yeah, Spike Jones joint.
I could see one of these days somebody will take a copy of that footage and they'll insert like montage of like young women crying. Every time you tell a joke, there's a girl crying.
There's a shot where you can actually see the people in backstage who are watching.
Yeah.
And you just, oh, so you saw it?
I saw the preview like on Netflix, which is like 5 minutes long. It's a pretty long preview.
Oh, for real?
And I don't know. I never thought he was that funny, but I never really watched his stand-up, to be honest. No,
he was funny. Yeah, honestly. I mean, like...
Randy! I never watched... Is that from fucking...
Something Giants or something? I can't remember, but... I don't remember all the detail, but I remember reading the article, and afterwards, I was like... I'm not gonna lie. After I finished reading the article, I hated him. I hated the girl. I hated the girl that he dated, and I hated the journalist writing it.
Yeah.
It was just pointless, like... Stupid. Like... You're a grown-ass woman. If you don't want to have sex with him, even he's kind of verbally harassing you.
He's not threatening.
Yeah. He's like 85 pounds. Well, you could beat him up, you know? And like, and you wrote a book about feminism or dating or something. Like, you don't have to harass her, you know? I don't believe he raped her or anything like that. But like, I thought it was just a shoddy job by the journalist too. Like, what is this? I was mad at everyone in the fucking story. It's like a Mexican standoff. Everyone's a fucking asshole in that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
you know which other comedy I saw? I saw that guy, Rami Youssef or something.
I heard.
Oh, how was it?
It was good. It was the same thing, though. There was a lot, like, it was an unconventional venue.
I heard one joke by he did. It made me laugh.
What was it?
It has something to do with, like, a Muslim, but we're choosy and picky about which rules we follow. So we call ourselves a la carte. That shit made me laugh. That's really funny. A la carte.
Yeah, he had some good bits. I didn't.
He's a good joke writer.
I got distracted a little bit by the venue. The venue was like a circular kind of venue.
That shit that Louis did in Phoenix. Like it's a big circle. Like he kind of have to. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but it was a small circle.
Yeah.
That was weird. It was like almost like they got a little. Like I would even give them. Like 10 feet in a certain circumference, and he had like a small little stage, and the place was just packed, and there was all this like gold and like designs on the wall, mirrors, and you're just like, huh, that's a cool venue, no doubt. Mm-hmm. To do a special, I got a little distracted because like they were trying to like do these sweeping shots, and then you would catch the other camera guy on the other side, and it was just like. And then you would catch glimpses because I want to just know. I know it's a big production, I just want the jokes to just to land the way they land, not to be like distracted by oh shit, look at the guy, look at there's the producer in the back.
Yeah,
and you can
catch
people who are working like the sound guys on the mixing board. Yeah. And it's just like oh okay,
there's some weird shit like
so
that.
I wasn't really feeling.
And then I've been seeing a lot of like
all this woke comedy is kind of throwing me a little bit too. By the way,
dude. Oh, you know what? I saw somebody who...
I hate that shit.
Came with some woke comedy, but like at a completely different angle. I'm sure you guys probably know him. Greer Barnes?
No.
He's a black guy from New York. He was at the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah.
And he basically has this whole bit about saying like how he kind of just flipped the whole thing. And was saying like, I hate following white women at night because he's like, if I'm following a white woman at night, I'll cross to the other side of the street because he knows that she feels uncomfortable. So he'll cross to the other side of the street. And then there's a woman on that side. So he ends up walking down the middle of the street. Yeah.
And then I get arrested for jaywalking.
He's pretty funny. I that was the first time I had heard of him for a while, but that was the first time I saw him.
Yeah. I think those, the Haziz and, the Rami, both specials were woke comedy, where I was just like in the middle of it. I'm like, I don't know why. I just
that just
hear.
Means that you're aware of social issues, like the discrimination against certain groups and things like that.
I want to hear some crash shit. Like I listen to like random like.
That's why I'm the show.
You know, honestly, I was actually stoked. It's like fucking Joe Coy's new one.
Yeah,
I just love the fact he's just making racial shit about areas. Like fuck it, like.
But a lot of it stuff is like very flattering. It's nothing mean that people are ashamed about.
Yeah, but he talks about stereotypes and he goes, "Hey, so I talked to this Mexican guy." He goes, "Hey, fucker," and he goes, "Why does it always?" like they're falling off a cliff, hey, everything. Yeah. So anyway, it's
that shit was a huge arena, man.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I'm not saying like, and it was just traditional shot, right? Big stage, yeah. Multiple angles, whatever, but not nobody with a steady cam on camera, yeah, no elaborate camera shots. And I was like, you know what?
And granted, there's a reason why they do it that way.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? I liked it because not like right now. Maybe I didn't want that a few years ago, like that racial humor. For some reason, right now, I'm like, oh yeah, dude, I'm really feeling this.
See,
dude,
now you're changing your ways because a few weeks ago, what's you're that? All saying like, oh, you need to be woke and all this for
comedy?
Shit.
For comedy?
I don't know. Yeah, you kind of felt like it because you're also telling him about this podcast that he does. These guys are so fucking woke. It's like a little annoying. Well, dude, I don't know how you sit in the room with these people. Are you sitting there listening to them talk?
Yes, yes.
What do you say? What are you thinking when you're hearing them?
Dude, I'm like, good for them. Dude, I'm not a hater. I'm a participant.
They're like the most woke motherfuckers.
Did you like that comedy special, Nanette?
Who?
Oh, my God.
Did you?
Who? I saw that shit. Nanette. It was – that was the name of the special. Her. It was a lesbian comedian. What was her name?
Nanette.
No. Yeah, basically. That's who – well, I didn't know her as.
Well, it was weird. I want to finish our point real quick. Yeah. You mentioned that comedy was the last platform of that you can say shit, get away with, like saying crass shit. But it's like, you're sad that how it's not going to be that anymore. But I thought that, well, I wanted to speak to that. That's all.
Wait, what?
Because you said, because it's like you're getting on me for being on the woke comedy.
Oh, yeah.
But comedy's the last platform. Comedy's different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this is the last platform. Also, they also say a lot of shit like, oh, you can never do that in a movie today. Mm-hmm. You could never do that in a movie. Or why would you want to do that in a movie? Yeah. And it's like, it's a fucking movie. You should be able to do whatever the fuck you want to do in a movie. And they do say that.
Yeah.
But then I don't feel like they would do it just because it's too dangerous.
Who's Lynette or what is that?
Oh, yeah. What was Lynette?
I'm forgetting her name. I mean, it was a critical acclaim.
Yeah, and people went crazy over that.
Yeah, and she is working on a new special called Douglas, which is named after her dog or something. Nanette was one of her ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
And
Hannah Gadsby.
That's right. Yeah. And she said at the time, this is going to be her last stand-up thing. She's retiring from comedy. And
I didn't even know she was around.
And I'd never heard of her until that.
Yeah, and much like Trump, She didn't know this thing's going to be a huge thing, and, you know.
She's back.
Yeah, and I don't blame her. Like, if you have a career, you should take it. But, I mean, there's parts that I really like. When you saw it, right?
I saw it, and
the criticism
she
about –
she did have a few jokes in there that were funny. But, like, the overall thing was very heavy-handed, like, fucking just nailing the woke
movement.
Like, hating on men, and the men are so – you know,
I think she was hating specific kind of back kind of man, but I don't, you know, I'm sure she doesn't hate gay men and shit like that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Straight men.
I was just curious what you thought about it, because I'm really confused by the whole comedy scene the last couple of years. I don't know what to make of it, you know.
It's really weird, and that's something that they talk about on Legion of Skanks all the time too, like saying like it's like when they hear open mic comedians nowadays, they're all like that. They all are like trying to outwoke each other.
Yeah.
And they're saying like, oh, well, this is what a modern comedian looks like. So this is who I need to be. And that's
do you think this is a permanent thing or just like a temporary thing?
I don't think so. I think it's temporary because it's just like what's popular right now. Like the same way that everyone was doing Seinfeld shit back in the day. Like everyone's doing this now. Yeah. And but it'll go back the other way.
If it's actually funny, maybe it would stick.
I think there will be some people that still do it. But I mean like – I love listening to the fucked up shit. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Dark humor.
Is this a bad example? You know how some of these famous, beautiful actresses, when they're young, they do all kinds of acting, like TV or movies and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But once they start getting older and they're having less and less nice roles, they get involved in social issues because she can't get good roles anymore. And the new way to get attention is doing some kind of social cause that put her in the center of attention.
It is pretty fucking crazy sometimes when you're watching a movie and you're seeing like, oh yeah, oh, Paul Rudd's dating this girl and it looks totally normal. But then you look it up, Paul Rudd's like 45 and the girl's like 24. But when you watch it, it totally looks like, oh yeah, they're making a good couple. But then you're like, holy fuck, they're not nearly the same age. It's amazing how young these girls are in these movies,
and that's
and
the
then
whole,
they that, fucking
that goes
time
back,
out.
That goes back to our first point, you know, at the beginning of the show, We're talking about how we're like naturally, biologically, men love younger women
in general. Yes,
in general. I'm not saying we're getting shamed for it, but I mean, it seems now
it's
like,
pretty crazy too. And looking at these women from 1999 who are the fucking hot ass chick in the movie.
Yeah,
you look at pictures of them now and like, holy fuck,
they don't look.
They don't look good.
But Leo is still – Leo DiCaprio is still killing.
Yeah. Because when this – now, then we should talk about this because it was some issue with Top Gun 2 because Kelly McGillis, she was a love interest. I probably got her last name
wrong. I'll look it up. Go ahead.
She is the love interest, Tom Cruise. She was not invited back to the second one.
Damn. Really?
No.
She too busted.
Wow. And she was even very honest in Vanity Fair article. Like, wow. Look – my look is appropriate.
Kelly McGillis.
Yes. I'm appropriate for, I look appropriate for my age, but that's not appropriate for the movies.
It's not.
So Tom Cruise's love interest is,
oh my God.
Jennifer Connelly or something like that.
That makes more sense.
And she's like 25, 30 years younger than,
Oh my God.
How old is Jennifer Connelly?
Right? Well, come on. They cannot cast fucking, this is what she looks like now.
Yeah.
I mean, she looks like an old lady now.
But the same token, Tom Cruise is probably around her age, and
Tom Cruise is like 55, right?
Yeah, he's pretty old. Yeah,
58. But Jesus,
the look, he still looks pretty fucking great.
Yeah,
and I'm sure it's probably a combination of genetic and how you take care of yourself,
how much money you have.
But
Scientology.
That's a sad thing that when you're young. You're mad at young girls because they start dating somebody older and they have all this privilege.
Oh, yeah. 57 years old. Jesus Christ.
But once they get old, you know, the looks go away, you know. It's you should feel bad for
–
Sweet
revenge or what?
You should feel bad for a lot of those young girls who are beautiful because it's hard to develop personality when they're 40 years old or older, you know. But men, when you get older, like Tom Cruise, you don't look bad. You get more distinguished.
But you know what else though? It's also – a little bit like more specific to white women. White women get old real fast.
Yeah.
And like,
what do you think?
Mexican, black, they all Asian, they all last a lot longer. Like, I remember in college, there was these two girls. Yeah. Both of them were very good looking. One was my age, so she was like 20 or something like that. And then her sister was like 26, still good looking. But you could see, and they looked very much alike, but you could see the young one who was like my age was beautiful. Yeah. And then the one that was a little bit older, you started to see little wrinkles. It was coming in real quick.
It sucks, but I mean, it just, it's the way life works, man. It's just, you know.
That's why.
You know what I always talk about? They lose the glow in their eyes or some crazy shit.
That's
like
why.
That.
Sure. That's why sometimes.
26 is not. It's not glow.
No, I didn't say she just lost a little bit. She just has a couple of wrinkles coming in, and I've had see the future.
I'm not gonna name. I had a couple of my friends like they were thinking about getting married, and they're marrying. A couple of them were thinking of marrying a white girl. What do you think? Like, well, if you're gonna do that, if you're a very practical person, you know when you buy a house, it's important to go there during the day. But it's also important you visit during the nighttime because the neighborhood could change nighttime. You know, like it looks great and peaceful during the day, but it might be sketchy at nighttime.
Yeah.
So, two of my friends, they're thinking of marrying, and they happen to be white. And they asked me if I had any advice. Like, well, only thing I will tell you is that I'm sure she's nice and beautiful now and kind. But my recommendation is if you really want to marry and if you want to make final decision, I recommend that you meet their mothers because you kind of could figure out what they're going to look like 20, 30 years down
how
the
they're
going
to hold up.
The mom looks like. Mm-hmm. If the mom looks like, you know, one of those classic cars that you just keep in shape in the garage or something. Even though it's a 1980 car, it looks still brand new.
Right.
2019. You could tell like the jeans gonna carry her over. But if the girl's mother looks like disaster, maybe you want to factor that in. It sounds really superficial, but
so you
let
have
me
to
tell
keep,
you, 2019 America, we live in a very superficial world.
Yeah,
Nobody wants to admit it.
Yeah,
they don't want to admit it. And going back to Mad Men, that's what it is. That show was great because whatever holes you have in your heart, whatever trauma you had as a child, advertisement, these people who sell fantasy that if you buy these products or service, it's going to make you happier. Mm-hmm. That's what the show really was about, you know? And
It was such a great show about this.
And they were just open about they're open about their superficialness, right?
Yeah.
John Hamm was, Don Draper was a fucking genius. And I love that show. Yeah. So
I love that era where America was just so oblivious and just so like, hey, everything's fucking great. We love God. We're Americans. We're the best. We're having the best cars, we got the best everything. And I want to stop here because I want to talk about that era, moving on to the next one, but in the form of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, I love that shit. Movie.
Did you see it already?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Okay, we'll talk about that. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. God damn it.
Damn, Cheech, you should have saw it. I should have told you to see it before you came.
God damn it. All right.
Okay, well, we'll be talking about that on Friday episode. So we're going to keep it spoiler-free. In case you haven't seen it, because Cheech hasn't seen it, but we could. We may have you to leave the room, my friend. I'm sorry.
Can I tell you? I think, except for Reservoir Dogs, I have watched every Tarantino movie on the day premiered.
Okay.
Because to me, going to his movie is like watching Super Bowl. It's a fucking event.
Shame on you, Cheech.
And shame on you because. Un-American. We question your citizenship now. But I love his shit. And I think he went to Bishop. I went to Torrance High. He's the school that he went is not too far from there. And my aunt had a bar in Torrance right next to his Pussycat Theater where, I think Tarantino worked one of those Pussycat Theater. Mm-hmm. And
very nice.
He is just the greatest entertainer. You know, like in terms of movies, I love Scorsese too, but his movies are not, it's not like an event anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's only one director, like, holy fuck. Movie's out. I have to go fucking see it because I love that movie. I absolutely love that.
Deep dive on Quentin Tarantino once again.
And Jackie Brown every year is getting closer and like hovering like number two. Is it going to be number one? You know, it's like, of course, they filmed in Torrance too. You know, I lived there. Tarantino. But
he's really big on South Bay. He lived in
I love
Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown's so good. Anyways, we'll talk about it on Friday.
All right, guys.
All right, we'll be right back.